This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Now for Gospel and Scripture with Brother Len on Golden Guide.
As the world looks upon me, as I struggle along, they say I have nothing, but they are so wrong. In my heart I'm rejoicing, how I wish they could see. Thank you, Lord, for your blessings on me.
From the people of God, welcome to this program, Golden Guide. The scripture says, there is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death or destruction. From Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12. So therefore, we need the Golden Guide.
Now, since we have made a reasonable conclusion that beyond the natural, there is the supernatural, and if there is that dimension that the one who lives there or resides there or exists there could be called God, there is nothing to stop us from stating that. So, by the time I had come to that, I was ready to take the next step. How shall I identify this God? Or can we identify this God? Well, before that, somebody came and told me, nobody can know the truth. And he explained it this way. Which side of the table is this pointer on? Well, to me it's the right, but to you it will be the left because you're on that side of the table. So right could be left and left could be right, depending on which side of the table. So which is this side of the table? Well, if I'm on this side, then this side is this side, and that side is that side. And if I'm on that side, then this side is that side, and that side is this side. Wow. And so he said, can you see? You can't say which is this side or that side. You can't even say which is right or left. Everything is relative. That's the concept of relativism, which states that there is no such thing as absolute truth. Every statement on earth is only relatively true. Every statement. Well, I had to look at that, because if every statement is only relatively true, then I would never come to a point where I would be able to say this is it and I'd like to follow this. So I had to look at what is called relativism. The other words that they use is subjectivism. Some others use the word postmodernism, or yet others say deconstructionism. Big words. But the concept is the same. They mean to say that there is no such thing as truth. In other words, you can say what you want and I can say what I want. Even if it's diametrically opposite, well, both of us could still be correct. It sounded okay in one sense, but I had to look at it. So here's a statement by David Trueblood. There is no objective standard by which truth may be determined, so that truth varies with individuals and circumstances. Another statement by Paul Feyerabend. There is only one principle that can be defended under all circumstances and in all stages of human development. It is the principle anything goes. So anything goes. The other words we could use is, well, anything goes means anything is acceptable, right? And if anything is acceptable, then we could also say, well, the other words are everything is acceptable. Nothing is not acceptable. All statements only relatively true. Well, I had to put it down in writing, so I wrote it down. All so-called truth is only relatively true. There is no such thing as absolute truth. Oh, we've used another word, absolute truth. Well, remember Kuth-Gödel's theorem? So none of us is in a position to really confidently state absolute truth. No, we can't. But that doesn't mean we cannot make reasonable conclusions and state that this is possibly a fact of the matter. So I had to define what we meant by absolute truth. There had to be some reference point in our existence. So here is how I defined, I found this definition, by the way. And it said, absolute truth is that which is valid for all people at all times, at all places. Now, it is not the absolute meaning from the other existence which sees everything. It refers to our existence, maybe in our community, in this world. That was a good definition. That which is valid for all the people, at all times, in all places. So I had to examine relativism. So here is relativism, one side saying that no absolute truth exists at all. And the other side saying, no, there are truths that we can have as reference points. So I had to examine relativism. You remember that's the phrase, everything is acceptable, anything goes. Well, I put it down like this, everything goes. What is the meaning of everything? Is anything left out? No. Nothing is left out when you use the word everything. And therefore, let's stick to that word then. If everything means really everything, then it will have to include absolute truth. Without absolute truth being in the mix, you cannot say everything. And therefore, when relativism says everything goes, it has destroyed itself by admitting absolute truth. Here's another point. Left side or right side? Well, no fixed meaning. So let's pull that phrase out and make it into a full sentence. There is no fixed meaning in any word we use. Do you know that that sentence requires a fixed meaning to tell me what it's saying? In other words, relativism sits on a solid, fundamental, absolute truth and tries to knock off the absolute truth. Look, if you're sitting on a perch and take your machete and cut the branch, where will you land? That is what relativism does. No fixed meaning in anything, and yet it uses fixed meanings to state that. How about the third one? Here's a conversation between two individuals who are trying to decide whether man went to the moon way back the 1960s, end of 1960s. Did man go to the moon? But prefaced to this would be a statement that we would make now. If everything is only relatively true, then everything is also relatively false. Right? Wow, that's another opening of our eyes. So everything on earth is relatively false? So why would anybody go to college, university? You may be being bluffed wholesale by your professor. Everything is relatively false. Anyway, here's the conversation. If everything is relatively true as well as relatively false, then one guy says, man did go to the moon. The other person says, no, it was a studio stunt. They went to Arizona, you know, where those the deserts and rocks are. It looks like the moon. It was in the, I saw it on TV. Well, TV, you know, like I said, studio stunt. No, it was in the newspaper headlines. Well, the newspaper headlines could be true. They could also be false. Now, my teacher said that the newspaper headlines were valid. Well, your teacher could be stating the truth, but could also not be the truth. It could be wrong. Now, my dad said my teacher is very reliable. Well, your dad could be true. Your dad could be also false. You talking about my dad that way? I know my dad. That's true. You may know your dad. You may not know your dad. You talking about me that way? I know what's in my mind. That's true. You may know what's in your mind. You may not know what's in your mind. Look, what kind of a conversation is this? Can you please stop this silly, nonsensical talk? Okay, I'll quit. But that doesn't mean I'll quit. Smile, laugh, giggle maybe. But did you watch something? The first question was, did man go to the moon? And every subsequent question and response took them further and further away from the original question. By the time they went through three rounds, it is impossible for them to return to the original question. In other words, if relativism is the norm, which itself is an oxymoron, then all you can have are questions which people don't understand. You can never have an answer on the face of this earth. So relativism really was not meeting the criteria for reliability. What is the steps going back? You know what it is called? It's called infinite regression. We move away from the answer to something else, and then to something else, and then to something else. So relativism can pull you down the path to infinite regression. So it looks like any apparent suggestion of relativism is either self-defeating or else is not a real assertion, but something more like an empty slogan. That is precisely what I believe postmodernism best represents, a mood, not even a philosophy, not even a statement that you have thought it through. Just a mood, a fad. To say it's true that nothing is true is intrinsically meaningless nonsense. The very statement there is no absolute truth is an absolute truth. There is only one principle that can be defended under all circumstances and in all stages of human development. What is that? That is just stating an absolute truth. So relativism sits with its foundation on absolute truth and still says it is non-existent. In other words, relativism does not stand scrutiny. So relativism is not really that which would appeal to a person who wants to make his decisions on something that is reasonable and rational. So there is a reference point. There is something known as absolute truth. So I could carry on with my search, looking for the identity of this God. Have people described what they thought was God? Yes. It's found in the literature of antiquity. What's the meaning of antiquity? Ancient. So I looked at the literature of antiquity, and here's what I found. Oh my, the list goes on and on and on. And what you see on the screen is only a partial list. Whoa, what shall I do with this? How shall I figure out which is right and which is wrong? There's no way multiple lifetimes is not enough to go through all of them. I sat down actually in despair that moment. But then I realized that when you are all alone and trying to do it all alone, it's better to be humble and see if you get help from somebody else. So I began asking others what they thought of this big long list. And as I spoke, the people fell automatically into two camps. Camp number one, the response was, "Oh yeah, there's a long list out there, but don't be too worried about that. Of them, there's only one that is right, mine. So if you choose mine, you're fine. Don't worry about the long list. It's called exclusivism, exclusively correct. This one, mine." The other camp responded this way, "Oh yeah, we've seen that big long list. But you do not have to worry anything about that long list because all of them are only different paths to the same final destination called pluralism. Plural, more than one. So which one is it? Exclusivism or pluralism?" Well, I decided to look at pluralism first. Why? Because if that was okay and it was correct, it stood to scrutiny and examination, then, well, I'm fine where I am. I don't have to do any more searching. I'm okay where I am. My path will also lead to the goal, and somebody else's path will also lead to the goal. I don't have to look for anything else than what I have. So I looked at pluralism. This is what it said. Actually, all religions lead to God. They are different paths but end up at the same destination. And here's a quote. "God is in the world, but Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad are in their little closets and we should thank them but never return to them." Here's a Zen saying. "To understand God is to listen. Listen to Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha, but don't get caught up in the names. Listen beyond them. Listen to God's breath." Sounds very mystifying and all-encompassing and inclusive. And it was good, but I had to look at it closely. Like I said, we must do critical thinking when we see any statement anywhere. So pluralism recognizes not only the existence of other religions, but their intrinsic equal values. Do you know, if you state pluralism as the truth of the matter, you have to state it this way, that all of them are equal paths. If you don't, well, then you say that they are unequal, then I would naturally ask for the best. So you have to, and then we go to exclusivism then. No, if you are stating pluralism to be the truth, then you have to say that all the paths are actually equal. They are not only valid and true, but equally so. Where did the people get this idea? Was it really there in the writings? And so what I did was go to the writings themselves. And here's what I found. This is what the Hindu writings state in the Bhagavad Gita. "I," meaning Krishna, the person who is on the picture there, "I am the goal, the upholder, the master, the witness, the home, the shelter, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and eternal seed." And from the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, these are the words: "Let there be one scripture for the whole world," Bhagavad Gita. "Let there be one God for the whole world," Shri Krishna. "One hymn, one mantra, one prayer," the chanting of his name. And from the Islamic writings in the Quran, Ayat 255 of chapter 2, it says, "Allah, there is no God but He, the living, the self-subsisting supporter of all. His are all things in the heavens and on earth. His throne doth extend over the earth. He is the Most High, the Supreme." This is supposed to be one of the regal or coronation verses in the Quran. Buddhism, this Lord, meaning Gautama Buddha, is truly the Arhat. Arhat is a person who has reached the highest stage or state of attainment. Fully enlightened, perfect in his knowledge and conduct, well gone, world knower, unsurpassed. Teacher of men to be tamed, teacher of gods and men, the Buddha, the Lord. Did you see a trend? Each one stating themselves to be the only way. In Judaism, for thus saith the Lord, who created the heavens, who is God, who formed the earth, I am the Lord and there is no other. Firm, strong, that's it. That's my statement. He is the Lord, no other. Christianity, there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. These five religions made a clear-cut statement in their writings that they were the only way. No questions, there were no equivocation, no ifs and buts. This is right and that's it. Not only did they say that, they also ventured out to say that not only are we right, but the other is wrong. Consider these statements. The Buddha held this belief in a permanent self or soul is one of the most deceitful delusions ever held by man. Do you know what he's referring to? He's referring to the Hindu doctrine of the reincarnation of the soul. The Hindus believe that we are actually bits of consciousness surrounded by a body. When the body dies, the consciousness, which is known as Atma or soul, moves away to another body. In other words, you migrate from here when the body is dead to another body. And what is Gautama Buddha saying? He's a Buddhist now. He's saying that is the most deceitful delusion ever held by man. Judaism says that understand that I am He, God speaking, Yahweh. Before me there was no God formed, nor shall there be after me. One sentence and he has knocked off every other competitor out of view. Christianity, all who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep, meaning the true followers of the truth, did not hear them. How about Islam? From the Quran 62 and Ayat 5, those to whom the burden of the Torah was entrusted and yet refused to bear it are like a donkey laden with books. Wretched is the example of those who deny God's revelations. Who is this verse talking about? It's talking about the Jews and the Christians who accept the Torah or the Taurat as the words of God. And yet, look at the words being used. If you deny them, you are like a wretched individual. So when you look at these are the words being used. Wretched, donkey, thieves, robbers, deceitful, no God. Now, if you use negative words, how can plurals now claim that all of them are equally true? Can you have a deceitful truth? How can it claim that all of them are good? Can you have something that's wretched and good at the same time? No, you can't. How can you say that you have a valid donkey, as it were? No. Pluralism does not stand to scrutiny when you look at the writings and compare its own claims. So, the written codes, the sacred writings, all over the world, clearly claim exclusivity. See, the moment one, two, or three of them claim to be exclusively correct, then every other claim has to be exclusive. And each belief system will then have to claim to be the only way. So I looked at pluralism once more. Remember, it says all of them are equal. But you know, if you have to call anything equal to another, you have to possess or refer to a central reference point. If you and I say or claim that we are the same weight then we have to go to the same weighing machine and stand on the same weighing machine. In other words, the weighing machine becomes the reference point. Only then can you say you and I are equal in weight. Alas, we do not have a reference point for religion. So there's no way to say one is equal to the other. Secondly, the Zen saying. Remember the Zen saying which said, listen to them, but don't get caught up in the names. Listen beyond them. Listen to them and listen beyond them. If you think of it critically and go to the writings, you cannot do that. If you listen to them, for example, if you listen to Muhammad, you cannot go beyond Muhammad because he says that's the end. He is the seal of the prophets and Allah is the only way. If you listen to Jesus, you cannot go beyond him to anybody else because he clearly states that he is the only truth, the only way. So the Zen saying is false in the sense you can listen to them or you can listen beyond them. You cannot listen to and beyond. Because when you listen to them, they will tell you not to go beyond them. Number three, the character of this God. In other words, pluralism tries to tell us that there is something known as the generic God. And under that generic God are the descriptions that the generic God gave the human race. And he gave one description to the Hindus, and he gave another to the Muslims, and to the Christians, and to the Zoroastrians, and all the rest. But if that's the case, then at some point this generic God was not exactly truthful. Because he told the Muslims to be fiercely monotheistic. There is Allah and one God called Allah. Then the same generic God went and told the Hindus, it's not just one. There are millions. In our peninsula, where I came from, the Indian peninsula, there are millions of deities and gods and goddesses and demigods and semigods. So is there one or the millions? And then he goes and tells the Christians, it's not a question of one or the question of million, it's three in one. Boy, that's really confusing. That really muddies up the whole water. So, if we say that there is a generic God, then this generic God was either confused or he was clearly stating that which is not true at either one or the other point. So the character of God comes into question if we espouse pluralism. So, at the heart of every religion is an uncompromising commitment to a particular way of defining who God is or is not. Every religion at its core is exclusive. What is truly arrogant is the postmodernist pluralism, which in vain pursuit of a superficial tolerance negotiates away the ultimate commitment by which any religion lives. And what is that ultimate commitment? It is the claim that it is the only way. That is the ultimate commitment. Agreement, says Paul Marshall, cannot be made without substantial compromise of core beliefs. In other words, if you want to bring them all together as equal alternatives, you cannot do that unless you take away some core fundamental beliefs from each of them. And the moment you do that, you have mutilated each of them. So you're not talking about them, you're talking about some other entity. So pluralism really cannot stand to scrutiny. Every religion claims itself to be the only way. So it is exclusivity, not pluralism. But we are not out of the woods yet. Because if exclusivity is the way, we do have 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 more maybe who are claiming to be exclusively the way. So how do we address this? What are the options there are when there are multiple claims of being the only way? One, all are correct. But that's absurd. It will not strike to reason. You can't have more than one as the only way. Number two, all are wrong. That's not absurd. It could possibly be. But how do we say anything is wrong? What do I need to have in my hands to say anything is wrong? I have to have what is right, what is correct. I didn't have that. So how would I call anything wrong? Furthermore, if I have to say that anything is wrong, I really, in effect, would have to go up to the founders, for example, and tell them that they were wrong. Really, do you and I have the authority to do that? Can we go to, say, Muhammad and tell him, I recognize you got your stuff from Angel Gabriel on Mount Hira, but I don't think it is true. Can you say that? Or can you go up to Jesus and say, well, people, you know, praise your Sermon on the Mount, but I think it was probably maybe, what, rubbish? Oh, how can you say that? I have no authority. I have no position. I have no knowledge for me to go and do that. Furthermore, there was one thing that all of these religions stated, and that is that beyond the natural, there was the supernatural. There was God. So, if I was to claim that all of them were false and all of them were wrong, I would have to throw out this idea of God itself. But I could not do that. We had settled that out in the previous session. There is, beyond the natural, the supernatural. There is a God. So, because of this, I could not say that all of them were wrong. So there was one option left. Only one is legitimate and correct when it says it is the only way. I struggled with these three options for a long time. I have not been able to find any other. If you do, you can contact me and tell me, hey, there is another option. But I have not found another. So until such time, I had to stick to the third option, that once when five or six claim to be the only way, logically, with the information we have in our hands, we have to conclude that only one of them is telling the truth and is actually legitimate and correct when it claims to be the only way. It was a crucial, amazing, pivotal conclusion that I came to at that point. There is one and only one religion that can make a legitimate claim of being the only way. In other words, there is one and only one way. Boy, that was tough going. Not only did it shake me up, but it also frightened me, because what if I was not in that way? And would I lose out everything? How shall I look for this only way? Before I started looking, I had to write down how significant would it be to make that claim that is the only way. What would it entail? Here are a few points. Number one, it was a conclusion reached by neutral persons like you and me. We just searched and brought the information, and it showed that there is only one way, logically. It destroys the concept of pluralism. We can't go back anymore to pluralism. In other words, it has a strong application to the followers of any religion. If you are a Muslim sitting out there, you can't espouse pluralism, because you will have to first deny your shahada and the words of Allah before you espouse pluralism. If you are a Christian, you cannot espouse and advocate pluralism, because you will have to first state that Jesus was wrong. Then you go and espouse it. So, if you're a follower of one of these religions, pluralism is out. You have to be exclusive. It is a fundamental claim. In other words, it's a very basic claim. If you claim to be the only, and we find out you're not the only, then most of the other claims of yours will be always held in question, because it is such a fundamental claim. And number five, it is the most powerful motivating claim. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Suppose I went to office, and my office was in a high-rise building on the 40th floor. And one day when I was up there, I looked down the window and I find that the 30th floor is on fire. Fire goes upwards, so it's going to come up to my floor. I begin to think how to get out now. Go to the stairway, thick billows of smoke. Go to the elevator, stopped. Run back to my office. What shall I do? Look down the window. Can I jump down? No, you can't. 40 floors, you'll definitely die. So here I am, no way out, ready to die. And just before I give up all hope, a fireman bursts into the room, kicks the door open, and shouts out, "Is anyone here? Follow me down this stairway. It is the only way out." What would you do? You would pull up your bootstraps and simply follow him. You have no option. To say that this is the only way out is the most powerful motivating claim to action. And that is what the founders of these religions meant when they said this is the only way. They meant for you to read those words, take it to heart, order your life to come in line with that, and that would be the only way out of your predicament, which is this world. It is the most powerful motivating claim. It also, number six, dictates the type of search we will now do. For example, how far ahead is the 100 meters Olympic champion, 100 meters dash, the Olympic champion? How far ahead is he from the others? Sometimes it's 0.001 second. And only he is the gold medalist, the champion, nobody else. So when we look at the way we're going to look, address this question, and evaluate the various claims, we are not looking for one that is way out in front. If it is, that's fine. But anyone just a little bitty ways ahead, that's enough. That's the one. The others can also run. And in the points, when they agree to that champion, well, they're okay. If they disagree, well, then you are out. The champion is correct as a reference point. But more importantly, it is not the question of being ahead. It is not even the question of being better. Here's what I mean. If we say that there is only one way, just one, and if we say, for example, that we are looking for the correct color of the marble, and only one marble then will be correctly colored. So I have in my hands two green marbles, one red marble, three blue, and four purple marbles. Which is the correct color? Did you get that? I'll say it again. I'm looking for the correct color. And the correct color will have only one. So I have two green, one red, three blue, and four purple. Which is the correct color? Think it through, and you'll come to the fact that the correct color is red. Why? Because there was only one. All the others, two, three, or four. Because of our statement that there is only one that is correct, we had to come to red. In other words, we don't have to establish one as superior. All we have to show that it is only one of a kind. And that will be it. So we're not going to look or put down or pull up any. We're just going to look at the features and see if there's one that is different from the others. But the key question really is, how do you compare apples and oranges? That's a hard question here. But that is a key question. The truth is, we cannot compare apples and oranges. If we could, we wouldn't have to make that statement. Just describing the different features of an orange and an apple is not comparison. The word comparison here means that you are weighing them out to make a choice. That is the meaning of comparison. So how do we make a choice? We really cannot make a choice just by looking at the features. But is there a circumstance by which we can make a reasonable choice, actually apart from those features? Here's my suggestion. Here's the way I went. You see, let's take an example. I love oranges. And there's the option of an apple and an orange on the table. I'm hungry. I'm looking for something to eat. The apple, fresh, bright red, sweet, shiny, juicy. The orange was under the tree for 2 weeks. By the time it came to the table, it had already lost its shape. There were big black blotches. And in the middle of the blotches, there were tiny holes. And from those holes, wiggly little creatures sticking out their heads and saying, "Hi, you tell me which one I would choose if I was really hungry." I would choose the apple. Did I choose between an apple and an orange? Yes and no. I did choose between an apple and orange because that's all there were on the table, too. But I really did not choose between an apple and an orange. If it was the choice between those, I would have picked the orange because I like oranges. But I chose not between the fruit, but between freshness and rottenness. And nobody can ever fault me for making that choice. So we can make a choice apart from the features of an apple and orange. What am I saying? I am saying that in my search, I had to look for another factor then to compare them. In other words, I moved away from the doctrines, the philosophies, and the tenets of belief, and I shifted to another factor that I would bring into the picture that would help make the choice. And this is what I did. I went to what I call the para-religious factors. See, every message that claimed to have come from there, above, came in the form of a story. Every message. So I turned my attention from the actual message to the story on which the message was based. And I would look at the history, how it came, what was said, what were the events surrounding it. And that would be the factor that would help me give credibility, increasing or decreasing, on the actual message. So this is what I did. Went to the history, and I asked 10 questions to 5 great world religions: Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, and Christianity. 3 questions would go to the writings, the sacred literature, and 7 to the flesh and blood founders of these religions. Here's what I had planned to do. I would ask the question equally to all 5, and then I would go either to the writings or to a source that was friendly to that particular religion and get the response. There was no way I could controvert the response or challenge the response. All I could do was pick out the response that I found and just place it on the table and see how it would pan out. What would happen if I simply asked the questions I had and got the answers from them? And that is what we will do in the next few sessions. But before getting into them, Let's describe the five: Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism. The founder of Hinduism is not Vishwamitra, he's one of the authors. There is no real single founder. Islam has Muhammad, Buddhism has Buddha, Christianity has Jesus, and Judaism could be either Abraham, David, Moses, but the one who really gave them the Torah was Moses. The literature is there on the screen, but we're not going to look at the literature so much as what we're going to pull out from the literature. Before I delved into this part, I found something what I call as non-unique factors or so-called unique factors. Do you know what these are? Each religion claimed to be the only way. And so to buttress that, to support that claim, they would say, look at this. This is what we have as unique to us. This is unique to this religion. But when I scrutinized it and looked at the other religions, I found similar claims in the other religions. So they were unique in the sense of the claim, but they were not unique because others also had a similar claim. So I found 12 of these so-called unique factors. Here they are, a complete message. They claim to be a complete message, not just spiritual, but health-wise and mental health and civic health and everything. Number 2, faith and trust are important. Number 3, there's a picture of a savior God. Number 4, there's an incarnation with God becoming human, a supreme being. 6, this religion is revealed. It is not manufactured by man. Number 7, it's beyond logic and reason. Number 8, realization, the experience are the actual points at which you test them out. Number 9, the goal is incredibly fantastic. Number 10, blessings are found even in this present life. You don't have to wait for the end to come. Number 11, it's universal. Our religion is not for those who call themselves by this name. It's for the whole world. And number 12, the presence of miracles. These are not unique, claimed to be unique, but not. So I put them aside because they wouldn't help me find the only way. So with these words, we will go to the actual search.
Believe until he saw the Lord, until he saw the nail prints in his hands where he was crucified before. Then while the doors were closed, Jesus stood in the midst and said, "Peace be unto you." Thomas, you believe because you see, but now I tell you of the truth. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they follow me. Tell everyone you know, tell everyone you see. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe. Wasn't there when Jesus walked across the hills of Galilee? But I felt the wonder of his love the moment that I believed. And I wasn't there when Jesus spoke to the storm and said, "Peace be still." But I felt his power in my soul, and now I know he's real. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they follow me. Tell everyone you know, tell everyone you see. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me.
Believe in me.
Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they follow me. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me. Blessed are those who've never seen, and yet they believe in me.
Secure.
friends, I invite you to listen to this program, Golden Guide. And the power of truth here on Free FM 89.0 with me, Brother Lynn Fletcher, every Sunday at 6 until 7 o'clock in the evening. And thanks for your listening.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.